Small Town Podcast is made possible by generous support from the Georgia Municipal Association. GMA supports Georgia cities. Small Town Podcast is supported by Consolidated Pipe and Supply Company. Consolidated Pipe is a full-line supplier of products for the water, wastewater, and natural gas industries, and they serve utilities and public works departments in cities, large and small, every day. They're the exclusive distributor of Master Meter AMI-AMR technology. As a family-owned company with a legacy that began in 1960, let Consolidated Pipe show you that they are dedicated to service.
I hereby call this episode to order.
Hey, small towners, it's Mayor Matt Seal, and thanks for joining me for another episode of Small Town Podcast. So this is the second episode of our four-episode road trip series on small towns in the state of Mississippi. This series is in partnership with the Mississippi Municipal League, and it's sponsored by Government Consultants. So just like our first episode in the series, we'll check in with our host before visiting our next small town. This time we'll discuss one of the biggest roles the Mississippi Municipal League plays for Mississippi cities, towns, and villages. All right, and I'm back again with Sherry Vizay, now that I can say her name properly.
Perfect.
I've been practicing. You know, last time we talked about what MML does and what the service it provides, and you said a word that I recognized immediately, advocacy.
Yes.
And you're talking about being at your state legislature fighting on behalf of all cities, but we like to talk about the small towns here. So talk about some of the things that you deal with in that advocacy. I don't want to use the word fight, but I know that sometimes it is. So to speak to some of the issues that the municipal folks are dealing with.
Well, a lot of what we do during the year, all year, is to talk with our cities, interact with our cities through different ways, through conferences, meetings, and talk to them about what are the issues they're dealing with at the local level. And things come up all the time that are giving them issues as far as how they need to operate within the law. And sometimes that law needs to be tweaked to help them be more effective. We take all that during the year and, you know, store it away. And then when the legislative session starts, we're ready to try to drop bills that will help them. We have a legislative committee that gives us guidance and direction. And then, of course, our board of directors approves our agenda. We usually start each session in January with four or five priority items that they've approved, and a lot of them are having to do with infrastructure. That's a huge issue for cities and towns across the country, really. And a lot of it has to do with protecting home rule and local authority. We've seen a disturbing trend of bills that preempt local authority across the country.
We're familiar with preemption bills in Georgia as well.
Yes, so we spend a lot of time looking at ways to stop that from happening. But we also have to play a lot of defense. Even though we've got our four or five bills that we're trying to get passed, we usually have to read an awful lot of bills to make sure there's not some unintended consequence. Because every now and then some well-meaning legislator wants to drop a bill to help their city, and in doing so, they've created some unintended consequences, which we try to fix. So we're really busy, and there's only two of us that I do lobbying, and we have a contract lobbyist. Mm-hmm. But really all of our staff is involved during the session. Samantha, you know, sends things out to the members to make sure they can read it, and our deputy director there. So we have a pretty small staff, the seven, compared to what Georgia has and Louisiana. But the legislative session keeps us busy, and we try to get our members as engaged as possible through a lot of different ways, getting them to the Capitol, getting them to email and call their legislators during the session. And I think we've improved our member interaction over the last few years, but that's a big part of what we try to do during the session is we tell their story, but we want them to be there to tell their own story. So
yeah. And that's important to get them. You're representing them, but I bet, I'm going to give you the opportunity to put in a plug, you probably would like the support of those municipal leaders, those local government leaders.
Oh, yes. It's much more effective coming from them to their legislators. And
absolutely.
So we try to give them all the tools and all the talking points and get them to do it. But we're always at the Capitol. So we're pretty busy ordinarily between January and March. This session was a little strange because it was suspended because of COVID, and it just started back in May and just finished like a week and a half ago.
Okay. Wow. Well, I know that's always you can't be thanked enough for that job, but it's so valuable. So I will thank you on behalf of all
thank
of your
you.
Cities and even mine because it's important that
things that happen in one state still have an impact or at least an influence. People like to refer to, oh, well, this bill passed in this other state, so we should do it now. And that's not necessarily going to be in the best interest of municipalities.
Right.
So, small towners, we're off to explore and share another great small town in Mississippi. Today, we visit a small town in the northern part of Mississippi that has participated in history from the Civil War to civil rights. And we visit a mayor who has served two separate times as mayor and has tried to promote his town to build a positive reputation to take it back to its former glory by promoting his small town's history in various ways. We're going to go talk with Mayor Sherman Carruthers in the small town of Okolona, Mississippi. Come go with me. Growing up in coastal Georgia, I only thought I lived in a small town. As soon as I graduated high school, I moved to the big city of Atlanta for college and to start my life. My life is a journey, and I ended up in Ocilla, Georgia. Population 3,400. We've got two traffic lights here. We're not looking to get a third anytime soon. Some years later, the people of Ocilla made me their mayor. Man, I love living in a small town. Other folks do too. This is the Small Town Podcast, and I'm your host, Mayor Matt Seal of the great city of Ocilla, Georgia. Small Town Podcast is sponsored by Public Software. While the name may sound new, Public Software has been helping small towns, cities, counties, and utility districts for over 50 years. They provide integrated software to help manage utility billing, accounting, and additional services. They help organizations accurately calculate, collect, and distribute money, print and mail statements, and effectively manage budgets. Some say they are a B2B company, but Public Software is focused on H2H, human-to-human connections. With decades of proven success and reliable service, let them make your software applications work seamlessly with the human interactions in your community. You can learn more about Public Software and what they can do for you and your organization by visiting www.publicsoftware.com. That's www.publicsoftware.com. Public Software. Strong relationships, stronger communities. All right, I'm in the City Auditorium, which is just a wall between the City Auditorium and City Hall in the small town of Okolona, Mississippi. I'm sitting across from the mayor of Okolona, Mississippi, Mayor Sherman Carruthers. Mayor Carruthers, thanks for joining us on Small Town Podcast.
Mayor, thank you for coming, and would like to extend a warm, hearty welcome to the little city that does big things, Okolona, Mississippi. We're so proud to have you.
I saw that on the sign as I was coming in, the little city that does big things. I can't wait to hear about the big things going on here.
Yes, sir.
We've already gotten into very interesting subjects of conversation that I'm excited to now get on recording. But we'll start with your story, even before we talk about Okolona, the little city that does big things. And I'll ask you the same question I start with every time I interview a small town mayor and ask you, were you born in Okolona, Mississippi?
I was born here in Okolona, Mississippi at the Okolona Community Hospital.
Okay.
In 1969.
So, hometown boy.
I am a hometown boy.
Okay. So, tell me what it was like growing up here then.
Well, for me, it was very unique. I grew up, I hate to use the word, feeling privileged. It was because that my aunt and uncle lived just off of Main Street, one block on North Olive Street, 111. So, I was privy with his children, who were several years older than me, our experiences on Main Street. Going in the stores, the store owners knew me by name. I would go in the stores like Howard's department store, hide in the clothes, hide on the racks, and I can hear him, Schoeman, where are you? You know, and go to the hardware store, and I would literally go in there and take the screws and the nails, and I would just consolidate them all together.
Oh, no.
And it would give the owner fits. And
I was going to say, man, they didn't like it when you were coming in.
They would say, oh, here comes that bad Sherman. So, and they teased me to this very day of the experiences here on Main Street. I would go as far as to say that, you know, having a very vibrant downtown commerce experience was very pleasurable for me. The Western Autos, the Benjamin Franklin stores, which we call the big 10-cent store and the little 5-cent store, and we had cafes and New Deal grocery stores, and that experience of being able, you know, and growing up and then walking to school. And so we were able to go to the store in the morning and get Hubba Bubba, for, you know, so big bubbles. And we got in trouble. So, you know, say big bubbles, no troubles. That's not true.
Because you blew big bubbles and you got in some trouble in school that
day?
Oh,
yes, sir. Yeah. Oh, definitely. I can still hear Mrs. Bierman. Now, what's that in your mouth?
Well, so born and raised here, graduated from the local high school.
That's correct.
What did you do after high school?
Attended the University of Mississippi. Well, actually, before that, I attended Itawamba Community College. Mm-hmm. I went to Southern in Louisiana in 1987, Southern University in Baton Rouge. The teachers went on strike, and I said, I need a refund because it was costing me $14,000 per semester to attend during that time period. And I came back home, went to the local community college, attended courses there, then transferred to the University of Mississippi, stayed there for several years, partied, as most of them. My mom says, no, if you're not going to do your work and bring home grades that are acceptable, you're coming out. So, actually, I landed a job with a Fortune 500 company.
Oh, what company was that?
It was called All Steel Incorporated out of Aurora, Illinois.
Okay.
It was the premier office furniture manufacturer in the United States of these Americas.
Okay. What'd you do for them?
Corporate scheduler.
Okay.
Actually scheduled production for all of their products here in the Verona, Mississippi facility. And I would travel back and forth to Muscatine, Iowa, because they had facilities all across, but corporate was in Muscatine, Iowa. So I had that experience. They were soon purchased by Hun Industries, H-O-N, and everybody, if you look at your office furniture, you're going to probably see Hun stamped on there.
Those file drawers,
the chairs, the
I know
cubicles.
They make everything. I'm just used to seeing that stamp on there.
You're absolutely correct. So, you know, I had the pleasure of and the luxury of working for them for several years, and then I left that company, and I started working for Lazy Boy as their corporate master scheduler, which was called Bajas USA, which was out of Canada, by Marty Silvers out of Canada. Then they sold to Lazy Boy, and I was there until I was elected mayor in 2001.
Wow. Well, look, you got us right into that. Usually I have to ask, now, how did you get involved in local government? But you took us right there. So in 2001, you're elected mayor of Vocalona. What made you decide to do that? And maybe what were some of the things you were involved in or engaged in locally before that point?
Actually, it was before that. It was in 1976 that the verbiage came out of my mouth that I wanted to be the first person of color as mayor for the city of Oklahoma. First grade, when America was 200 years old. That's the thing that I tend to tell my students, my former students, but I didn't tell you that I also had the privilege of teaching at the Oklahoma High School for several years. History and language arts for the lower levels.
Well, take us through that, because when you were working for the different companies, you were living here, and you said Verona, Mississippi. Yeah. How far away is that?
Verona is going to be about 8 miles.
Okay,
so 12 miles north of here.
You were living right here. So
most definitely.
Still living in Oklahoma, just happening to commute a little bit to go to work. And
most
the same
definitely.
Thing when you were with Lazy Boy?
That is correct.
Okay, okay.
That
so
is
you
correct.
Were then after that, you were a teacher before?
After that.
Okay.
After that, I was mayor. I was elected mayor in 2001 to 2009. And in those 8-year hiatus of not being the mayor, I was in the public school system here in Oklahoma.
Okay, all right. So let me back up then, because I want to try to keep our timeline straight. There's so much to talk about with you, apparently. So in 2001, you ran for mayor. So
that's
I'll go back to what made you decide to do that, other than in 1976 you declared it would be so. What did you want to accomplish? What was your motivation? Or maybe I should ask it like this. Was it specifically because what you said in 1976, you wanted to be, as you said, the first mayor of color? And feel free to expound upon that. You and I have already kind of had this conversation.
I come from a miscegenated family, so I can't just sit here and say I'm African-American. No, that is not just that's not who I am. Race is a construct. And based on my Ancestry.com results, I am a multifaceted individual from all parts. And even these Americas, it shows in my DNA as being from North America down to South America.
Okay.
And then guess what else was in there? A little Neanderthal they discovered.
Oh wow. Okay.
I was like, wow. Wow. Back to the point of that question that you asked. When God give you a revelation, he will give you a confirmation. And we have to give an ear to him in order to hear when he speaks. Because when the day came for qualifying, I qualified listening to the voice that says, go qualify. I got in the car in front of City Hall. After turning my papers, I said, what in the world have I done? I said, why did I do that? He said, because I told you so. As they say, that was it.
Yeah.
And being obedient, you know, I had an uncle, you need to go knock on all these doors. You need. He says, when I ordain you, you're ordained. It's not about religion. It's about relationship. So I tell people, I don't get this mindset of being a religious fanatic. I see it as a relationship. And that relationship, and when you know who you are, whose you are, then it's easy to accept what he has. It almost falls back to what Shakespeare says, that life is a stage and we are the actors.
Hmm. I'm curious about that election year, 2001, and this is the year when the election took
yes,
place.
Sir.
Were there people other than you that qualified to run for mayor that year?
There were.
Okay. How many people total?
I think three.
Was one of them the
incumbent?
The incumbent mayor. Okay, mm-hmm. So you ran against an incumbent, and then there was one other person also that qualified to run for mayor.
I'm not 100% sure, but I think so. I knew the incumbent, and I think that maybe there were one or two, maybe one other individual who ran during that time period. It seems so long ago, 2001, but I do. You know, I remember winning and won in the first primary election.
Okay, so you didn't require a runoff. You got more than 50% of the vote?
That is correct.
Or maybe it's a plurality.
50 plus one.
Okay, 50 plus one. So you did get more than half the vote. Okay.
That's correct.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you very much.
So I would normally ask if there's a platform. Here's the things we want to get done. It seemed like the mission and the motivation was very, very different than doing a specific thing, but achieving something for the city and for that position. But obviously, once you get elected, you better get to work.
So
what were some of the things that you set out to do? I know, obviously, that because I don't believe you were on the council before. You ran for mayor in 2001 without any previous local government experience. So I'm sure there was a steep learning curve, or at least there was for me. You may have gotten off to a better start. But what were some of the things you set out to do once you achieved that and got elected mayor in 2001?
There were several things that we wanted to do. You know, we definitely want to change our image of the city of Oklahoma because of Oklahoma had this negative image due to the civil rights movement of the 70s here in the city of Oklahoma. And that went along, you know, it was like a tick that never got fooled and fell off. It stayed attached to the city of Oklahoma. And that was one of the main things that I wanted to do was to change the image of our city, to allow the world to know that we have these hidden treasures here. We're a unique community. Our location is prime. We're an oasis. And doing the research and knowing that Oklahoma, how vibrant Oklahoma was before the Great Depression, being a railroad town and all of these things, you know, that's the thing that I wanted to help to capture, to celebrate. Now, my experiences, I did not just come in as mayor and say, now, what's my job? I think that's the worst thing that a person could ever do, is to run for an office and
right,
then
and
after
no
get
idea.
Elected and you have no idea. You know, as I stated, I attended the University of Mississippi. At that time, I was majoring in public administration, so it gave me an oversight. And then,
well, since you knew you wanted to do this since 1976, you've been preparing at least a little bit along the way, I assume.
Well, like I said, that was 1976. After winning the election, my classmates reminded me of that. So it was not in the recesses of my mind.
You'd forgotten that.
I forgot it because I remembered the first thing I wanted to do. I wanted to be an astronaut. I wanted to be the first black astronaut to go into space and to go to the moon. And that was during that time period. And I can remember, you know, the counselor coming in because we were in first grade and the counselor came in and that was the first thing she asked. You know, you all write down what you would like to become.
What do you want to be when you grow up?
And I dare not to say what I think she said. I think she said, you're going to have these outstanding mathematical skills. And I was like, oh, math is my weakness. I said, okay, you know. And then that's when I can't be the first black astronaut. I said, well, I want to be the first mayor of color for the city of Oklahoma. And back then, I said, first black mayor of the city of Oklahoma. You know, we evolved in terminology because I stated race is a construct. It just came to fruition. And like I said, when God has something ordained in your life, is there. You're actually thinking that you're doing these things, that making these decisions on your own, and you have no idea what's waiting on you down the road. And then when you get there, you're like, he prepared me.
There it is.
He prepared me for this.
I like to focus on usually positive things on this, but you said you wanted to change the reputation. So I can't help but ask, what was the reputation, or at least the way you saw the reputation of Okolona that you wanted to change it away from? So what was it when you took over that you felt like work needed to be done?
Well, definitely, as I previously stated, due to the civil rights movement that occurred in the latter part of the 70s here, about 77, 78, 79, I mean, we had horrible race relations. I think it's documented at the Mississippi Museum in Jackson, but we had horrible race relations. I was looking at articles that I saved as a child from the commercial appeals, and I can remember when I was in fourth grade, 79, there were economic boycotts because the African-American community was saying, you know, we want to see some representation in government. We want to see some blacks working a black working at the bank. You know, this is not a sterile environment. If, you know, this is a multifaceted community, let us all move forward, because Okolona shared a very unique history of race relations prior to the 70s. Now, there were some things that happened that people never really talk about that I've later discovered in my studies at the university, but those, we had to change that. Now, Okolona, before the Great Depression, was almost at 4,000 plus in population.
And what is it today?
2,600.
Okay.
It has fallen to 2,600. You know, we had the Great Recession. That had a negative impact. But now when I look at the data showing that we're moving in a positive. We're moving in a positive direction. We're looking at the retail that we need to continue to expand, but we're looking at the manufacturing environment, that the industrial environment here is very productive for the citizens. Now, it needs to be diversified, of course, because you never want to put all your eggs in one basket.
Right, right.
And so with furniture being the mecca for Okolona, that's what we tend to draw. But we need to look, according to the new comprehensive plan, we need to start to look for other industries to balance that. But as we were saying, it was that negative image of Okolona with the race relations that people just clung to. And like, we never really got over that, because soon after that, in 79, Geraldo Rivera came to Okolona. And that's where he did his first news coverage. And my cousin down the street, Houston McNeese, he has a photograph of a wad of tobacco being thrown in his face. We were national news. Yeah.
At the time,
we made national news, like when Ferguson and all of this other stuff, we were making the national news. Do the research and you'll see what caused that, you know, and there are still relatives from the Carruthers who was killed in the local jail that have not forgotten and will not forget.
And those are descendants of yours.
You're absolutely correct. Yeah. And then my aunt and uncle live right across the street from the jail when all of this stuff happened. So, you know, I'm like, wow. But as a child, you really don't have an in-depth knowledge of what's going on. You just knew that you were a part of a movement. And I remember they marched us down Olive Street, right off of Main Street, now where we have what is called Mural Park, and they marched us all to the jail, because that was going to be known as Bloody Saturday. And that's when Klansmen and mob members were on top of the building, and they were ready to precipitate bullets down on the marching individuals led by Howard Gunn and Skip Robinson. There's a book called We Will Shoot Back that I encourage people to read. It captures part of that movement.
And so it's things like that you felt like that was the reputation of Okolona. Well, let me ask this. Do you think things had moved on and gotten better before 2001? And let me even give kind of a different question at the same time for you just to kind of speak to. Tell me the impact to the community. I would assume plenty of people were very positive about the fact that you were elected mayor, and that was a historical event. I would not be surprised if you told me it also created some other tensions. Had there been improvements, you feel like, before 2001, and you just kind of continued that momentum? And then what was it like in 2001 in the community to have this historical election?
Wow. 2001, I would say that I'm the past president of the Chamber of Commerce before being elected mayor. So having that working relationship with members of the community as a whole, we identified these things. And then we became a Main Street community. And those are things that help to guide us as far as here's what we need to do. We need to rebrand Oklahoma. And I definitely promote the little city that does big things because that was the motto because of the selling of war bonds during that time period.
Okay.
And that's what Oklahoma is noted for.
So that slogan goes back a long way.
It does. But for me, when I was elected, I'm not going to say that I was elected 100% by the African-American community. That would be a fallacy because there were people of the community who wanted to start to see change. And I can remember being elected. After being sworn in, I get a phone call, and they says, you need to go out there to the city limits and take a look. And this is on Highway 41 going to Pontotoc. And there was this toilet with a figure in overalls and basically said, Oklahoma has gone to, and I'll say poop.
Okay.
And so.
Help me keep my G rating.
That's right. It's gone to poop. And you can infer from there.
But they were saying that because they'd elected a black man or a person of color as their mayor.
That is correct.
And so someone pretty much was saying, well, this is the end, huh?
Right.
That's unfortunate. It's also, like I said, not surprising, unfortunately, because I would imagine while some people would rejoice in the historic nature of your victory, others would be scared and there'd be increased tension by that. So how have things gone with that? Or like I said, I never, just like I told you, if race relations in small towns, especially in the South, obviously relevant. But also, I'm sure you accomplished things that had nothing to do with race in your first set of terms as the mayor. So how did you improve upon things? And just talk about things maybe in general between 2001 and 2009. We'll go through your first set of terms, and then we'll talk about the in-between.
You have to lay the rhetoric aside and get down to business. Aging infrastructure, dogs, potholes.
I don't believe I've had a podcast episode that didn't have those three categories somewhere in there.
So you know, when that elephant comes into the room, and you know, and Oklahoma's being incorporated in 1850, we're older than, you know, states out in the West. And I think the locals tend to forget about that and how Oklahoma played a major part in the development of America itself. Well, that's another lecture, you know, even in Mississippi history, because Oklahoma was the queen of the Prairie Belt. We were the premier. We were the creme de la creme. We were bigger than Tupelo. It was Oklahoma that helped Tupelo after the Great Tornado to get on their feet and to advance them to where they are today. Now, we had leadership that had poor vision. They didn't want vagrants. They didn't want the railroad to build a hub center here. We already had the turnaround station where all trains came to Oklahoma and, you know, to go in the various directions. And the mindset was that they were starting to try to cater to the mom and pop ideologies, mm-hmm. which was one of the worst things. And we're suffering from that today, along with those boycotts that happened in 79, the economic boycotts, to where it literally shut down a lot of the stores on Main Street. And when you start to do that, then your sales tax base start to decline.
Sure.
So those are the things that, you know, I wanted to work on. How can we increase the sales tax base? How can we get individuals out of apartments and into their own homes so they can have to be a part of the American dream? Apple pie, baseball, and home ownership. Start seeking grants, because my demographics, as far as from a socioeconomic standpoint, over 50% of my population is considered living at or below the poverty line. Hmm. Now, if I take this and put it in retrospect based off of the census data, it's going to change just a little bit based on the data I read last night. But at the time when I did my charts, there's a 33% baby boomer population here, a 45% renter population. And of that, 95% of those individuals are renting, living in government-assisted facilities, right, that offers them the luxury of their rent, their water, and their gas and other utilities. Those are bad indicators when you have a population of 22% that are paying taxes. So the 22%ers are keeping the city afloat, because if an individual is a recipient of an EBT card, and, you know, and I'm not putting a person down, because, you know, definitely there should never be an issue with eating here in America.
Sure.
Never should be an issue. But there's no sales tax collected.
Right. So that's a sale that happens and someone is provided for.
Yes.
But it kind of leaves you without the revenue that normally would have come from the sale.
That is correct, because Okolona operates under a special charter. We're a special charter. We're not a code charter municipality. There are about 13 special charters in the state of Mississippi.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a special charter, and, you know, there are certain duties and responsibilities that are allocated to the city council. They have the hiring and firing power. They have the contractual authority. Let's see what else. And then they have the duties and responsibility of adopting a budget.
Right.
And to make the necessary allocations for improvements,
mm-hmm.
streets, sidewalks, all of these things. The mayor is not, that's not his allocation. That is based from the city council.
You execute on the budget provided by the city council.
You're absolutely correct.
Because we talked before, there's not a city manager in Okolona. You are the city. Well, there is. It's you.
It's me. I'm the city manager.
There's not
I'm
a separate
mayor,
person.
Mayor, city manager, president of the council.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So human resource man. According to the attorney general, you're responsible for the day-to-day operation of the city of Okolona, and all department heads, clerks, and municipal attorney reports to you on a day-to-day basis. And I'm like, wow. Big job, God.
Well, you must have done okay, because unless your terms are much longer and if for mayor in Mississippi than they are in Georgia, 4 years later, you ran again and were reelected.
Well, actually, 8 years. From 2001 to 2009, I was out for 8 years.
But, I mean, you in 2005, you'd have had to run again.
Oh, most definitely, yes.
So did you have opposition that time?
I did. Okay. I did.
Was it either of the same two people that ran against you had run against in 2001?
It was not. It was the
different people.
Different people. It was the long-term mayor who had been here. I think about 20 years,
okay.
almost 20 years.
So previously serving mayor, but not the incumbent you had to defeat.
That's correct.
In 2001. Okay.
Another gentleman who I went to school with, he was several grades under me. He ran. He was a person of color who ran, and so I won in that without a runoff.
Okay. So for the second time, you got your 50% plus one. Plus some more, maybe, but at least that.
Yes, sir.
And got another 4 years. So continued on doing some of the same things.
Right, because, you know, like I said, we have infrastructure. We had infrastructure issues. I had a low tax base as far as citizenry who are paying taxes. The retail trade area, or my retail area, you know, it had a low tax base coming in because of the impact of the 70s. And then I said, we got to change all of this to start working closely with our Chamber of Commerce, Executive Director, Patsy Gregory during that time period. We went with the local industries. We started having business and industry meetings, talked about what incentives the state of Mississippi had to offer, and United Furniture brought their distribution center here.
Oh, wow.
We got L&B. We worked diligently to get industries, to create jobs, to put people to work. And by doing that, we were able to receive state and federal funding for infrastructure improvements in those areas. Not only that, streets, sewer, fire protection, all of the critical things that it, components that it take in order to show individuals we're open for business. Come look at us. You know, we're 17 miles south of Tupelo. We're an hour and 30 minutes from Memphis. We're 2 hours from Birmingham. We're 45 minutes from Mississippi State. We're 45 minutes from Ole Miss. We're 45 minutes from the W. We are in the hub. We're, I think, maybe 45 or maybe, yeah, about 45 minutes from MUW. Not MUW, but Blue Mountain College. Up near the Toyota facility. We are in the oasis. We are the oasis.
You're at the center of it all, right?
That's right. That's right. It should say all roads lead to Okolona.
Well, tell me this, and I hope this isn't too bad a memory to bring up, but then 4 years later, 2009, you said, I assume you ran again, the way you said it before.
I did.
And you were defeated.
That's correct.
So why do you think that was? And then talk about what you did next.
Well, I'm glad you asked that question.
Going to teaching after that.
Well, I'm glad you asked that question because, and I'm going to be honest with you, with the positive things that we were doing and the forces, the constructs that were at work, I wanted to write a book, and I'm not going to tell you what I was going to call the name of the book, but it was the night that some people gave Okolona back, and I felt like I had been led to the slaughter because I had given so much of myself for the advancement of this community, all people. And I had people over here that were who were using the Olenskip methodology, and these individuals still around. Some are still around, but we've had funerals since then.
Obviously, you became the mayor again, because I'm sitting here with you, and I introduced you as the mayor, and we'll get to that in just a minute. But you mentioned what you did a little bit in the interim there. So after 2009, or I guess beginning of 2010, a new mayor was sworn in. It wasn't you. And so talk about what you did. When did you run for mayor again and get elected?
2017.
Okay, 17. So between 2010 and the end of 2017, talk about what you did. Obviously, you stayed in the community, and I think you said you ended up doing some educating.
That is absolutely, you're absolutely correct. The day that I, you know, I was like, well, what am I going to do now, you know?
Yeah.
You know, I've given so much of myself. I entrenched myself in you know, working in local government and et cetera. A friend of mine called and asked if I was interested in working for him as a consultant. And I was like, I'm going to start my own LLC consulting firm. But that never came to fruition. I wasn't depressed. I don't think I was. But I felt so let down that I was ready to move from Oklahoma. I was at my, because I still had a mortgage. It
still felt like a betrayal, I'm sure.
It definitely.
Yeah, and the way you described it, I can see that.
After leaving office, and I was about to leave Oklahoma, my phone rang, and it was Dr. Stevens, the superintendent of education. He says, Mayor Carruthers, I have a job for you. You have a job for me? What do you mean you have a job for me? I haven't applied for a job with you. How would you like to be our parent center liaison? I said, I'm honored. I'll take it. So from there, then I worked as the parent center liaison. Then from there, I became a sub teacher, an assistant teacher, then a sub teacher, because they went to privatization through a firm in Tupelo. And God fixed it so that, and, you know, and I hate that it happened to certain individuals, but I was in that classroom for the whole year.
Wow.
And they realized that I had a strength in history, because for some odd reason, after leaving office, I became entrenched in history. And I was sitting there, and I have at my house legal pads, pages and pages and pages of research. And I don't even know why I was doing writing all of these various papers.
Yeah, just
and not at the university.
Just out of interest. Yeah,
just out of interest. And all of those things came together.
Yeah.
And then, you know, of course, continued, went to the, started back at the university to finish my degree, completed, amazed myself, you know. The University of Mississippi has that's our Harvard of the South.
Yeah.
And it has the reputation, which is not a bad reputation, and it's a true statement. You're going to be very entrenched. Your opinion means nothing to us. It is evidence-based driven. And if it's not evidence-based driven, don't present it.
You better have the documentation to prove your point.
Everything must be done. And then and I would like to write out my papers at the end. More research is needed.
You told me before we even started recording about starting college, but then getting this degree so much later. Tell us how many years had passed between last time you took a college course and then left to go to corporate America.
Wow.
And then be the mayor and then go back to school.
Oh, my goodness. Let's see. Let's go back to 1991.
So 91 was when you
I think that's when I left the university.
Uh-huh.
To, let's see.
And then when did you?
Let's say 17, 16, 15, 14. Maybe 2014, because I got 2 degrees. I went back and got.
So you said 91 to 2014?
14, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm like, wow.
So 23 years?
Yeah. And believe you me. And you know what?
Did you still have some credits that carried forward?
They all, you know. No, I'm not going to say all of them were transferable.
Yeah.
But my, you know, I changed my course as far as what I.
You're completely different.
And then,
now.
You know, so I have this associate in business administration, but I have a bachelor's in general studies with a minor in history, education, and sociology.
All right, I want to cut to this segment that's become quite popular on Small Town Podcast. It's the get to know you questions. I've got 4 questions that will help me. We've never met until today, so now I'm get to know you, and I bet that someone that thought they knew Sherman Carruthers might learn something new after these questions. So, first question of the get to know you questions: do you now have or have you ever had a nickname? It was a millisecond of thinking about it, and then a glow over your face. So that means there's a story here.
All I know is, you know, growing up, my uncle and them, they used to call me Egghead.
Egghead?
Yeah. Why I have not? Because, like I said, I come from a miscegenated family, so my hair was very fine.
I figured it was because you studied so good in school and you do all these extra research. I mean, you're just rattling off little research things like you're kind of a bookworm. I get that all the time, but egghead, huh?
That's what that's, as a, you know, I so was a child.
That's a family thing. Anybody still call you that now?
No.
Family
reunions or anything? I think sometime they'll mention it.
Okay, just for old time's
sake. And I'm like, oh.
All right, next question. What is your go-to karaoke song?
My go-to karaoke.
Yeah, yeah. Gotta sing karaoke.
Oh, what's it?
But you get to pick the song. You go
Harry
up
Hippie.
Harry Hippie.
Uh huh.
Sing. I'm not familiar.
Harry Hippie.
Okay.
Lies asleep in the shade. Life doesn't bug him cause he thinks he's got it made.
So you don't even need the words.
Never, ever, ever taking a thing in particular. Ooh, he might even sell. Free pass on Sunset. I like to help a man when he's down. But ooh, how can I help a man when he's sleeping on the ground? He's like a bottle of water. Hurry, just go around. He's singing that sad song all day long, sha-na-na-na, sha-na-na-na. Okay.
I was going to let you keep going. All right. Now I it's usually difficult to get someone to name one, but even more rare for them to sing it. So that was a special special edition of Small Town Podcast, Get to Know Your Questions. All right, next question.
Calvin Richardson version, by the way.
What is your favorite meal or favorite dish?
Chinese. Oh, I love it. Ni hao hung hao, ni hao ma, to all the Chinese, they know it's a ni hao nina, and I love my, oh gosh, crab legs.
Do you go in, so since you can speak the language, you go in and that's how you order?
Sure. Oh. I mean, yes.
Okay. What can you translate that for us? Which dish do you like?
I do the crab legs. I like everything in there.
So really just Chinese food in general.
But yes.
You don't have a special, kind of your usual?
It's going to be, I got to have the broccoli, chicken, spicy shrimp, and noodles, rice noodles.
It's like a combination plate.
I do. I have a platter. I don't have a plate.
All right, final question. If you could attend any concert, any performance, any singer, band, duo, any kind of performance, and it can be somebody that is either currently alive or now dead, mm-hmm. whose concert?
Michael Jackson.
Michael Jackson. It's like you were ready before I even
answered. We share the same birthday.
Oh, really?
Yeah, okay. August 29th.
Okay. Michael Jackson.
Yeah.
All right. Mayor, thanks for letting me get to know you.
Gracias, senor.
On our last episode, we spoke with Samantha Wilmoth at the Mississippi Municipal League about the Small Town Conference. Today, we hear about a valuable service they provide to all their member cities.
All right. We're back with Samantha Wilmoth, the marketing coordinator from the Mississippi Municipal League. And Samantha, you were telling me, MML provides services to its member cities, but you were telling me specifically about one called City Hall Center. So tell us a little bit about that and what people could get from City Hall Center.
Right. So our City Hall Center is our in-house clearinghouse of different technical reports, republished reports, technical briefs, surveys, grant updates, and then an ordinance catalog that we keep track of, whereas a city could pass an ordinance and a few weeks, months, years later, another city could be going through the same issues or have the same situation arise, and they can contact us and say, hey, we're looking for an ordinance regarding stray dogs. What do you have?
Right.
And we can give them examples. A popular one lately has been social media etiquette.
Yeah, I bet.
And they're wanting to know how other towns are regulating that, and we're able to just kind of provide examples of what other cities have done in the past.
So it keeps people from having to reinvent the wheel.
Absolutely.
Instead of starting
yeah.
from scratch, just see what's already working somewhere. Isn't that the beauty of the network effect of municipal leagues and associations?
Yeah, you never have to start from scratch, usually.
That's right.
You have a neighbor to lean on.
Well, definitely finding a catalog of ordinances to use as a template for my own would be very beneficial. And I've actually called up GMA several times and say, hey, who else has got something like this? Because I got a problem I got to solve. But what else is available at City Hall Center?
So one of the newest programs that we've been offering through the City Hall Center is licensing through Grant Finder. We've partnered with EfficientGov to be able to offer our municipal members a license to access the online database of private, state, and federal grants that are available for municipalities. and it gives them unlimited access. And we found that it's actually very instrumental for our smaller towns that might not have the staff or the technological capabilities that our larger ones do.
Yeah.
So that they have a one-stop shop for a complete search of all the money that might be available to them.
So that's one of those services that helps out those small towns a whole lot.
Absolutely. And it helps out our staff, too, because we can just, you know, give them a website where they're not asking us specific questions,
right,
or we're having to direct them to specific organizations. It's a really convenient one-stop shop.
Yeah, great. Thanks, Samantha.
This road trip series of Small Town Podcast in Mississippi is proudly sponsored by Government Consultants. In cities and towns of all sizes, modern municipal government can be a challenging financial enterprise with complex rules on things such as property taxes, user fees, water rates, and the issuance of debt. With these increasing challenges and complexities, local government leaders are turning to trusted advisors like Government Consultants to assist them in navigating these financial issues for the betterment of their communities. Government Consultants can advise your local government on things like capital improvement, long-range planning, and budgeting for general government projects, as well as water and sewer enterprise projects, financial feasibility of projects, including the local government's ability to carry the project cost or debt service, analysis of current budget and expected revenue stream, total cost analysis of financing alternatives, review of capital improvement financing programs, and advice on the timing, structuring, sizing, and marketing of any municipal debt. Government Consultants has many years of experience in advising local governments on all types of debt financing, and they can help you with general obligation bonds, water and sewer revenue bonds, special assessment and urban renewal bonds, as well as lease financing, short-term notes, tax increment financing, tax, bond, or grant anticipation notes, emergency borrowing, and borrowing through a conduit issuer such as the Mississippi Development Bank. In maintaining and growing your community, the finance piece is more important than ever. Let Government Consultants help you manage and grow. They'd be happy to visit with you in your city to discuss how they might be of service to you. Call 601-982-0005 to talk to Government Consultants today. Small Town Podcast is supported by the Southern Mercantile. Visit southernmercantile.com for a blog about small town living and an online store with a selection of carefully curated goods. The Southern Mercantile. Simple living, Southern charm. Irwinomics is the producer of Small Town Podcast. We also handle digital media production and marketing for small businesses in small towns like ours. We believe that small businesses and rural communities are the key to sustained growth and high quality of life. And we know that now, more than ever before, small businesses need someone that they can trust to help with the very necessary aspect of digital marketing to help your business grow and find new customers. Your digital presence is now just as important as your physical presence, if not more so. Irwinomics helps clients with all aspects of digital communications, from website creation and maintenance, social media, email lists and newsletters, and making sure that all of those things are working together to build your business beyond the city limits and the county lines, so that you can focus on keeping your community strong and vibrant. For more information and to see how Caitlin, Bailey, and Matt can guide you into growing your business, go to irwinomics.com or contact us through Small Town Podcast. That's IRWINOMICS.com. Irwinomics, helping small town business thrive.
Well, Mayor, tell us, we've gone through a lot of your journey, and it's quite a story, but to get specific about Okolona, I'll ask this question. I used to ask this. It's been a long time. If someone were going to come to Okolona and they only had time to visit one site or one, I don't know if there's a historic monument or place of historic significance, maybe there's a local festival that happens every year, what would you want to make sure someone experienced in Okolona if they could only come and experience one thing?
Well, with COVID-19, COVID-19, that's what I call it.
Let's set that aside for just a...
If we did not have that COVID experience, I would definitely encourage them. You know, we have this Okolona Music Festival,
yeah,
Arts and Music Festival. I have to show you the photograph. I have never, ever, the last time I saw that number of people on Main Street, Okolona, was when it was the unveiling of the Confederate monuments in 1910. Then we had a festival. Our festivals are drawing people. I mean, there were so many people here, literally, that it went all the way to what is called the Overhead Bridge, which is located on Main Street. Then it turns by the Confederate Monument, and it goes past the police station, and then there's an overhead, a bridge that goes over the railroad tracks because the tracks are below grade. So they had to build the overhead for it. And I'm glad they did, or we would be in a situation like Tupelo, still debating what they're going to do about Crosstown.
Yeah. So that would be the thing that would be, make sure.
But I would tell them, but that wouldn't be the only thing. There's so much here. We have a treasure chest. You know, we're on the National Geographic Traveler. We made sure that we got Oklahoma on there because of our role in the Civil War. The Battle of Oklahoma. We have a Confederate graveyard that has over 800 soldiers buried. Some are unknown, and then there are those from various states that fought in the Battle of Shiloh, because Oklahoma was considered more of the hospital. And they would put them on the train and bring them to Oklahoma. The house that I live in was used as a hospital.
Oh, wow.
Well, according to the document, it was a Presbyterian church. When I read those documents, I was doing some research, and I said, anything that says Oklahoma, light bulb is like, how,
you
know.
Check it out, give it a little more attention.
And I started reading, and then they said that the citizens desired a Presbyterian church, and they wrote for an order to be in a Mr. Carruthers commission that the Presbyterian church be built on the corner of Jefferson and School Street, where the present home has the original stained glass windows. When I read that, and I saw how his last name was spelled.
Yeah, same way?
Same way. My hair stood up on ends, and I slammed the book closed over. I was in the city of Aberdeen, and it terrified me. And, you know, talking about life coming to full, you know, back to circle.
Oh, yeah.
You know, here it is, you know, wow.
So a man named Carruthers lives in a house that was previously of the Presbyterian Church, but was commissioned to be built as the church by a man whose last name was Carruthers.
You're exactly right.
That's pretty neat.
And I was like, wow. I love the house. And that was another, you know, I grew up as a child looking at all these Victorian homes. And you know, we have a few antebellum homes. But if you were to go back in the history looking at the old newspapers on trade day in Oklahoma, and you will see Pat Buchanan, who ran for president, families from Oklahoma.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, yeah, and their house is in desperate need of repair, so I hope that someone here...
You need someone to come and invest.
Invest. We have some antebellum homes that are definitely... One is on the most endangered list. That's the Chandler House. And I call that house Gone with the Wind. My cousin, she moved from Texas, and she was in the process. She was going to buy the house. And all of a sudden, I think her brother convinced her to just construct a house. And it's north of town, so everybody had put out that I had stole money from the city and went and built this mansion up there. I said, are you crazy? I said, you all are, you know, what are y'all drinking and smoking?
But local controversy and gossip, right?
Right, right. No truth to that. None whatsoever. But, you know, it's that. Those are the things that we have to offer, you know. We're working now. We just received a grant, and we're going to set up like a... We're working to set up various stations to where when you drive up, it's audible. You turn your radio station to this channel, and it'll tell you about these historical places of historical significance for the city of Oklahoma.
I saw a sign for, I don't know if it was like a tour of historical buildings or homes. Is that what you're talking about?
Well, that's part of it. This one is also going to encompass African-American tourism as well.
Okay.
We're going to try to put some bike racks so that we can encourage our citizens to be more active, you know, and that will be a great thing, especially during this time of COVID-19, to get out and explore things that they can do with the family. And we want to make our town a tourist destination, mm-hmm. because I'm trying to get citizens to think green. The Civil War happened. It's over. Don't throw your baby out in the bathwater. Because, you know, the damage has already been done, that the bypass was built over 2.5 miles away from our city. So what we need to do now...
So you need to bring them off the bypass.
You're exactly right. I want them to build roads to Oklahoma.
I can't help but ask this question. I almost did. You were talking earlier about the Confederate statue that's right outside mm-hmm. City Hall. You've talked about a Confederate graveyard.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds like you're saying, yeah, those things... That they're a sign of something negative that happened to us. But if it brings tourism, we want to bring tourism. Talk about that, because people might find that odd. You felt a mission to be the first mayor of color, you said, not black mayor. But that might seem to kind of be counterintuitive. for that. So you're just looking at it as, hey, if people are going to come and spend money here, then come let them see those things of historical nature.
Well, this is what God, the vision that he gave me back under my first two terms. He says, I'll take a lemon and allow you to make lemonade out of it. He says, Oklahoma is primed from Civil War to civil rights. With the old Oklahoma College campus out there, there's an opportunity to definitely put on display and to hear the voices of African Americans during that time period. I have video clips of when the college was very active. You start to get some of the verbiage from Dr. Battle, and then those individuals who went to school there, mostly all of the teachers in the state of Mississippi leading up to 1965, they had to go to the Oklahoma College because it was certified for African American teachers, and they're still alive. So I look at it from a WPA standpoint that, hey, we need to capture their voices while they're alive, just as the WPAs capture the voices of former slaves. There's an opportunity for Oklahomans to develop that, just as the Smith Robinson Museum in Jackson, Mississippi. The state of Mississippi has a phenomenal African-American museum. However, it does not compare to the Smith Robinson Museum. I literally toured the whole African-American part of the state's museum. I didn't get to finish Smith Robinson. I'm going back to Smith Robinson.
And what's the Smith Robinson Museum?
It's in Jackson, Mississippi. There was a lady named Dr. Mosley, who's like the former probably state president she's deceased now, of the National Council of Negro Women, who actually owns the Oklahoma College campus. The state of Mississippi, I think, branch owns it now, because it went from the locals and some things, misuse of funds and things of that nature occurred, or misappropriations of funds, whatever it was, that I think the state organization literally bailed out our locals. But there's an opportunity. You have to think green. If you don't have green, there's no black, white, nothing. You know, you go from plantation to ghetto. You have to have revenues. And you have to say, what is it that Oklahoma possess? And according to Doug Griffith's book, 13 Ways to Kill Your Community, you just have to be flat-footed and just look at whatever it, you know, look at the beast for what it is. If we're not meant to look back, then why do most people have communion? You need to ask yourself, why do I go to communion? Why am I having? You're not going to communion to ask for forgiveness of your sin. You don't need communion to do that. You don't need communion for repentance. He says you do these things so that what? Your children will never fall back into that state again. There is a place in all of history, and we are a small community, small enough to be a living museum. Definitely, I think everything has its place. We have a Confederate graveyard, as I stated, with over 800, ideal location. But since, you know, we're starting to get this ripple effect across the nation of the removal of Confederate monuments that are on public display, as far as on courthouse squares, downtowns, things of that nature. And there's this movement and this sentiment. It has even trickled to some of our locals, and I've received, you know, emails and emails and emails, you know, about the relocation. And I told them, you need to start a GoFundMe account page, because at the university, that is being removed through private donations. And I said, now, I looked at the Daily Journal, and the cost estimation to do that is going to be $1,125,000, and you have to receive approval through the Department of Archives and History for what is going to be considered a more suitable site, and then you're going to have to meet their criteria as far as how it's going to be put down. If we work to get us on the National Geographic's Traveler, we don't want to be removed from that, because the Battle of Oklahoma happened. You can't change it. And so what I have tried to work hard to do is to any of the states that are having issues with their monument and they're needing a place to place them, we have ascertained over 200 plus acres with federal funds called the Old Town of Prairie Mount, where the Battle of Oklahoma was fought. And it would be ideal for a Confederate monument museum. Notice I said that using the universities, especially my alma mater, the University of Mississippi, Mississippi State University, a partnership of the, so that the story captures all voices and is accurately told, not from just a Southern's perspective, from a humanity perspective. That is what I think it would be, and it would transform the revenue base here in the city of Oklahoma. That's my idea. None of you other mayors can steal that. That is my disclaimer. You cannot go, I called Mayor Randall over in Birmingham, but I did not receive a response. You know, you have to look at things from a realistic standpoint. I don't hear Biloxi talking about they're finna get rid of Jefferson Davis's house in the museum down there. You know, you have to take a lemon situation to make lemonade out of it, but you tell it correctly, and that there's no debate left. I could see monolithic stones with Alexander Stevens' cornerstone speech as you walk through, especially that part when he said, this is a neurosis of the mind. And he talked about his religious perspective as to the war and what it was about. And then we could also incorporate Jefferson Davis's speech as well. But here's the thing. I tell the locals, I said, why are you so concerned about the monument downtown that did nothing to impede your advancement? And there's the clock on the bank that has General William Pfingster Tucker's name up there. You should do your research on him. And according to the WPAs, who lived here and was assassinated here, led the charge to get Governor Amos, the first African-American lieutenant governor, and the other senators of color removed to be impeached and removed from office. And he's noted as a fine fella. Fine gentleman he was. That's Maddie Stevens, WPA.
Well, Mayor, we've spent a good bit of time talking about all kinds of things in Oklahoma. And as we wrap it up, I want to give you the same opportunity I give all my guests. And you speak directly to the small town podcast audience, and you tell them why they should either come visit. I know you got a couple buildings you want people to come invest in.
Yes.
Or maybe they should come just move to and become a part of Oklahoma, Mississippi.
You know, definitely. You know, we have a low sales tax. Not sales tax, but we have a low ad valorem tax and et cetera. That's one of our key components. Our quality of life here, it's the small town feel. Everybody knows everybody. We come together when in times of tragedy, this is a heartfelt community. Believe it or not, you know, I have seen the growth in this community. And I would like to say that come and look at our attributes. Better yet, I want you to go and look at our submission to the Small Town Takeover, Hometown Takeover, Small Town Takeover, HGTV commercial. We did our submission. I would like for you to take a look at that because a picture is worth 1,000 words.
Do you have that up somewhere?
Yes. Go to YouTube and type in Oklahoma's HGTV Hometown Takeover submission.
All right. There we go.
You're going to see some of our locals. You're going to see the buildings. You're going to see, you know, they're going to talk about, you're going to get that feel. You're going to get that Oklahoma, that Oklahoma hometown feel. You know, we're home of Milan Williams of the Commodores. We have athletes play for the Miami Dolphins, Tim Bowens and Kareem Moore play for the Kansas City Chiefs. We have an array of assets here, not only just historical, but we have individuals, Jack Gregory, who played for the Cleveland Browns. They're in the Mississippi Hall of Fame. His dad was a prolific football player and possibly baseball player. We have it here. We are a hidden treasure, and we would love for you to come help us in the development of this community. We are a small community that can be a living museum for the rest of the world. Hey, we're open for business. And we would love to have you come to Oklahoma and bring the children to get that feel because you can put your hands on it. When the children can feel it, they know that it's real.
I feel like you need to say the city tagline.
Hey, we're the little city that does big things. Come on back. Welcome home to Oklahoma.
Well, Mayor Sherman Carruthers, thanks so much for joining us on the Small Town Podcast.
Yes, sir.
Well, small towners, that'll do it for this episode of Small Town Podcast. I want to thank Mayor Sherman Carruthers for talking with me today. I also want to thank the Mississippi Municipal League for partnering with me on this series, and thanks also to Government Consultants for sponsoring. Join me on the next episode as we continue our road trip through the state of Mississippi, and I hope everyone out there will continue to be safe and take care of yourselves and each other. And I hope you'll find a way to support a small town near you in whatever state you call home. You can do this through a visit where possible, or by engaging with them on social media and supporting their local businesses through e-commerce. As always, I want to thank our season sponsors for this season, the Georgia Municipal Association, Consolidated Pipe, the Southern Mercantile, and Public Software for continuing to support us as we explore and share great small towns. I'll talk to you soon, and y'all are welcome to come to Osceola anytime.
Small Town Podcast is an Irwinomics production. We release new episodes every other week featuring small towns through stories of the people who live and lead there. Our podcast episodes are made possible with editing assistance from Resonate Recordings, who also mixes and masters all of our episodes. You can subscribe to Small Town Podcast on iTunes or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts, and the next episode will download while you sleep. You can also leave us a rating and review, which would help us reach new listeners. We would really appreciate it. Beyond our episodes, you can engage with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. You can also learn more about us and the small towns we visit by visiting our website, www.smalltownpodcast.com. We'd love to show all you small towners out there some great images from the small towns we visit and let you know about the festivals and events you can participate in. Thanks again for listening, and we hope to see you real soon, because there's no place like Osceola, Georgia.
We stand adjourned.